We are in the midst of a sermon series entitled Holy Hopes, and the very first sermon that Mike gave in the series, he indicated that the hope that we have as Christians is holiness. That God is going to take people like you and people like me and make us holy. Heaven knows we need a lot of work, don't we? And last week, Pastor Mike started the topic of our response to earthly authority and how a person who is being made holy or has been made holy by God should respond to earthly authority. And we dealt with the issue of governing authorities and the state and its civil magistrates, and we dealt with slaves and masters. And this week we turn our attention to the relationship, the earthly authority that exists between a husband and a wife, or between a wife and a husband. Now, I must be honest with you, I felt remarkably like a woman all week this week. In a very manly way, of course. As I was preparing for this sermon, I was just always continually struck with the ominous task that I have of speaking on this subject. But at the same time, I was excited about speaking on it, and I was intimidated about speaking about it, and I was looking forward to speaking about it. And I was feeling all of those things at the exact same time. So I understand a little bit now of what it's like to be a woman. I'm glad you're laughing. So this week we are turning our attention now to the relationship that exists between the husband and the wife. And if you look in your sermon notes, there's going to be a little bit of a change here today. There's one side that's meant for the wife, and there's one side that's meant for the husband. And I couldn't stop the presses because I didn't find this out until Friday. We're only going to deal with the topic of a wife's relation to her husband. Next week, we are going to deal with the husband's relationship to her wife. In light of Peru Sunday and all that sort of thing, I'm just trying to constrain my times, and I could see myself, if I had to do both sides today, that I was going to go way over time, and I don't want to do that. So we're going to deal with the wife's relationship with their husbands today, and next week we'll deal with the husband's relationship with their wives. And what I hope to show you over the next 2 weeks is that in marriage, that there is this idea of a mutual subjection, where the wife is called to be subject to her husband's authority, but at the same time, the husband is called to subject himself to Christ and live with his wife in an understanding way. So there is this idea of mutual subjection within the husband-wife relationship, although primarily it is the wife that is called to submit to her husband. And men, because I'm dealing with wives today, this does not give you freedom to check out, all right? You guys stick with me today because I want you to understand what God is calling your wife to do, or if you're a man who is single, what God is calling your future wife to do, if he permits that. Okay? So let's turn to our text this morning. Hear the word of the Lord. 1 Peter 3, verse 1 to 6 says this, "Likewise, wives, be subject to your own husbands, so that even if some do not obey the word, they may be won without a word by the conduct of their wives, when they see your respectful and pure conduct. Do not let your adorning be external, the braiding of hair and the putting on of gold jewelry, or the clothing you wear, but let your adorning be the hidden person of the heart, with the perishable beauty of a gentle and quiet spirit, which in God's sight is very precious. For this is how the holy women who hoped in God used to adorn themselves, by submitting to their own husbands, as Sarah obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord. And you are her children, that is, you are Sarah's children, if you do good, that is, if you submit to your husbands, subject yourself to your husbands, and do not fear anything that is frightening." Now, if you're filling in the blanks with me, you'll notice at the very top, there's a little diagram, a little picture of a woman. She's got her arms in the air like this, And she's got a question mark over her head. If you're filling that in, you can write beside that if you're a wife, or a wife-to-be possibly, you can write beside that me. And there's a big blob, notice, on the bottom portion of the picture. And you can entitle that, my husband. And the reason it's a big blob is because that's kind of what he looks like when he's laying on the couch. You can kind of see two appendages there, one with a remote in it, and he's barking out orders from the couch. And we understand from what Peter says about husbands that there are two types of husbands. There are husbands who obey the word, husbands who are obedient to the word, and there are husbands who are disobedient or, as it says on the screen, non-obedient. They disobey the word. But really, the response that the wife has towards her husband is very clear from 1 Peter 3, verse 1. He says, likewise, wives, be subject to your own husbands. What God requires of the wife is for her to live in subjection to her husband's authority. There are all kinds of negative connotations, I suppose, with this word subjection. As I was reviewing this text, I was thinking what automatically jumps into my mind when I say the word subjection. And when I say that word, I think of some tyrant husband who's barking down orders from above at his wife, and we immediately get this picture of him lording over his wife, this type of authority. And certainly, there are men who are like that. And when I say the word submission, which I am going to probably use synonymously throughout this sermon, what we often think of, at least what I think of a cage match in UFC fighting where some guy's got a double arm hold on some guy and he's causing him to submit. He's causing him to black out. And we think of this, that's what I think of when I think of the word submission. But what does Peter mean when he says the word submission? What does Peter say when what does Peter mean when he says, wives, be subject to your own husbands? We're going to look at that for a moment here. Peter uses this term subject. When Peter uses this term subject, he is using it as a military term. The word is actually a Greek word, which means to align yourself under. So what Peter is trying to get wives to acknowledge, or trying to get wives to see, is that there is an authority structure that exists within a marriage. And this authority structure has existed from the beginning of time. Paul points us back all the way to Adam and Eve when he says, I do not permit a woman to have authority over a man. He points all the way back to Adam and Eve, and this authority structure has existed from that time on. And I want you to understand that it's authority structure that is not based on knowledge, skills, and abilities. I know with my work, and probably with your work as well, if you want to move up in a company and you want to gain more authority and more responsibility within a company or within an organization, you have to show that you have knowledge, you have skills, and you have abilities in order to be and do that job. It's not so in marriage. It's not so in the relationship between a husband and a wife. There are many occasions in which you see them day after day after day where the woman obviously has more knowledge, more skill, and more ability than the husband. But it does not reverse the relationship between a husband and a wife. It has to do with maleness and femaleness. It's not my idea. It's God's idea. And what Paul is asking, or Peter is asking us to do, is to understand that there exists within a marriage this authority structure where the husband is the head of the wife. And I want to make a caveat here. Mike referred to this and mentioned this last Sunday. There are limits to our submission to authority. Just like there are limits to our submission to civil authorities, there are limits in a wife's submission to her husband. For example, if a husband is asking his wife to disobey God, that would be a time for a wife to legitimately say to her husband, I respect you, I honor you, but I honor God more, and I can't do what you're asking me to do. And likewise, in the situation where a husband is abusive, and a husband is beating his wife or endangering his children in the family, these are times where I believe a wife is not to be submitting to her husband's authority. And she should be seeking out the help, if you're in a church, the help of elders, in order to find out how you should be dealing with this problem that you have. As a police officer, I have seen too many women living in these relationships, going on and on and on and on again, beating after beating after beating, only to think to themselves that he's going to change this time. And that may happen, I suppose, but in all likelihood, it does not happen. And there are situations in which there are limits to a wife's submission to the authority of her husband. What I want to also mention, another caveat here, is that I do not believe that this idea of a wife's submission to her husband's authority means that there is only one-way communication, where the husband communicates one way to his wife and there is nothing coming back from the wife. My idea and understanding of a marriage is that there is two-way communication with open dialogue that is open and free, but ultimate deference is to the husband on points of disagreement. So it's by no means the husband, by no means a situation where the wife is not communicating with her husband her concerns, her needs, her desires, or anything like that, her thoughts and ideas. The husband ought to be respecting those needs, concerns, and desires, and the communication ought to be a two-way communication. So, what does subjection look like? That's the question we have to answer today. And Peter explains that for us in 1 Peter 3, verse 1 to 2, where he says, "Wives, be subject to your own husbands, so that even if some do not obey the word, they may be won without a word by the conduct of their wives." And here's what it looks like: when they see your respectful and pure conduct. So when you put wheels on the words, "Wives, be subject to your husbands," we see that subjection, and you can fill in the blanks here on your outline, subjection is respectful and pure conduct from the heart. So when Peter talks about wives being subject to their own husbands, he means that their conduct towards their husbands is to be respectful and pure, which is more helpful than just the word "be subject to your husbands." It gives us a better understanding. But we're still left to grapple with, what does it mean to be respectful and pure? And what does it mean to have it come from your heart? And then Peter holds out for wives the example of Sarah. And this brings even greater clarity for us. I have 3 points I want to make with regards to the example that Sarah has given to wives and how they are to respect their husbands. And it's this. 1 Peter 3, verse 5 to 6 says this: "For this is how holy women who hoped in God used to adorn themselves by submitting to their husbands. As Sarah," and here it is, "as Sarah obeyed Abraham and calling him Lord." Now this seems to be a reference back to a chapter in Genesis, chapter 18. And most of you know the story of Abraham and Sarah, so I'm not going to go into great detail here. But if you turn back to Genesis 18, we have 3 men appearing to Abraham. Abraham is living out in the middle of Canaan or someplace, away from his home anyways. And he is living in a tent, and he's been there for quite some time. And 3 men appear to Abraham. And Abraham quickly rushes in and says, "Sarah, I need you to make some bread for me. We got 3 men here, 3 guests, and I want to give them something to eat." So Sarah's busy in the tent making bread while Abraham is talking with these 3 men. And Sarah, in the tent, overhears the conversation that's going on between the two. And the conversation between the two is, the 3 men tell Abraham, "This time next year, your wife is going to have a son." And Sarah, who is about 100 years old at the time, or thereabouts, laughs to herself. At Genesis 18, verse 12, you can read it with me there. So Sarah laughed to herself, saying, "After I am worn out and my Lord is old, shall I have pleasure?" And this is the only reference in the Old Testament that I could find where Sarah is calling Abraham Lord. "After I'm all worn out and my Lord is old, shall I have pleasure?" Now I'm going to go back to the story here. 25 years earlier, Sarah is living in this place called Ur of the Chaldees, and she's sitting in her house, sipping tea with her family. And Abraham comes in and says to her, "Sarah, God just spoke to me, and he told me to go out to the promised land. Don't know where we're going, but we're going, and we're going to leave behind our family, leave behind our house, and leave behind everything that's familiar to you, everything that's secure to you, and there God is going to make us into a great nation." 25 years earlier. And Sarah obeyed Abraham and went out with him. And that's the first thing I want to note with regards to Sarah's example, is that Sarah was obedient to Abraham and she followed him out. The next point I want to show you is that Sarah respected Abraham and continued to respect Abraham. 25 years after having left, she was still living in a tent and she still had no children. And she was still calling Abraham Lord. That, to me, is incredible. If there was ever a time when a woman had a right to be bitter and angry and disgruntled at her husband's authority, it was there. 25 years later, 25 years had passed, and she had been continuing to live with Abraham and following as Abraham felt he was following the Lord. And when she heard this, she still called him Lord. And the final point I want to make with regards to Sarah's example is that Sarah's obedience and respect was from the heart. I'm not going to ask the slide guy to go back, but back in Peter, it says this, "But let your adorning be the hidden person of the heart with imperishable beauty, of a gentle and quiet spirit, which in God's sight is very precious." Now, how do we get the idea that Sarah's attitude towards Abraham and calling him Lord was from the heart? And I think we can see it very simply from that text in Genesis 18, verse 12. It says, Sarah laughed to herself. So this is a monologue that Sarah is having with herself. She laughed to herself, saying, "My Lord." And we can see that if Sarah was talking to Abraham, she may have been putting on an act. If Sarah was talking to somebody else, she may be putting on an act and saying, "My Lord," while all the while rolling her eyes, "My Lord, my Lord." But we can see that Sarah is talking to herself here, and she says, "My Lord." She calls him "My Lord." What I want you to notice here, next in the text, is what the outcome is of a wife's respectful and pure conduct. 1 Peter 3, verse 1 says this, "So even if some, that is some husbands, do not obey the word, they may be won without a word by the conduct of their wives." So the ultimate hope of a woman's submission to her husband is that they might win him over by their conduct. And for you wives who are living in relationships where your husbands are disobedient, I'm not saying non-Christian, I'm just saying there's areas of their lives where they are disobeying the Lord. They are not following his word. I don't want you to miss the significance of this point. And I don't want you to miss the significance of what Peter is saying here. What Peter is saying is that in the absence of your husband's obedience to the word of God, your respectful and pure conduct actually becomes
the silent ministry and the powerful ministry of the gospel to your husband. And as a result, it is the most likely way that he is to be won over. Now, I don't know of too many wives who don't want their husbands to change in some way, shape, or form. And the way we often get our husbands to change is by nagging and begging and pleading and whining and manipulating and all kinds of things. And what God is telling us here, if you want your husband to change, the way that you get your husband to change is by respectful and pure conduct from the heart. Now understand, I think I have a little bit of understanding the monumental task that God is calling women to do when she is asking them to submit to a man, to their husband. But it is a task that comes with rewards, and it is a task that, although the end is not guaranteed, it is the most likely way to win your husband over. I'm going to change gears here for a moment. We've looked at this idea of subjection, and we found that subjection is this respect and pure conduct from the heart. And we saw from Sarah's example that respect towards Abraham was seen in the way that she called Abraham Lord, and that the pure conduct, as I see it, is obedience, obeying her husband, and that it was all from the heart. But in the last verse of our text, Peter seems to allude to one of the greatest obstacles that in the life of a wife that will keep her from being able to submit to her husband's authority. If you look with at me at 1 Peter 3, verse 5 and 6, and this is what it says. For this is how holy women who hoped in God used to adorn themselves by submitting to their own husbands, as Sarah obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord. I want you to notice here, he says, and you are her children if you do good. That is, if you subject yourself to your husband and do not fear anything that is frightening. And from this text, although it's not directly stated, I think it's implied fairly clearly that fear, it seems to me, is one of the main things that will choke out a wife's ability to submit to her husband. You can go to the next slide there. Fear is like a lasso around your ability to submit to your husband. It's a frightening thing to submit to a husband. And really, to be honest with you, I don't blame a wife. I have to find responsibility with the wife if she doesn't submit, but I can understand if she is unwilling to submit to her husband. In many ways, it feels like you're placing your life in your husband's hands. And I noticed last Sunday I was sitting in the parking lot and I saw a whole whack of parents leaving the parking lot with their teenager driving. I'm thinking, for some of you, it's like sitting in the passenger seat while your 16-year-old's learning how to drive. It can be a frightening experience to submit to your husband and to submit to your husband's authority. When you hand the reins of control over to him, the fears are multitude. Fear of losing control. Fear of instability. Fear of losing your identity. Fear that he might make a mistake or do something wrong. Fear that he's not following God. In the case where he is following God, fear that he is following God. Fear, fear, fear. And all of this causes you to hold back and not give to your husband what is rightfully, what God says is rightfully his. That is your respect and your pure conduct, your obedience. Fear is a huge factor, I think, at least in talking to Barb this week. Fear is a huge factor in your wife being able to submit to you husbands. And that leads us into our first action point. If wives are to overcome this fear and submit to their husbands, they've got to identify the fear and confess it to God. And that's action point A. You need to identify the fear and confess it to God. You know, fear is like one of those unwelcome guests in your house. It's annoying, but it's not so annoying that you would actually ask it to leave. And in not asking it to leave, it disrupts your entire day, it drains your energy, and it sets the entire course of your life on edge. Wise, if you want to obey the Lord in this monumental task of submitting to your husband, it's time to identify the fear and ask it to leave. Confess it to God. 1 John says, if we confess our sins, he is faithful and just to forgive us of our sins. And living a life of fear is a life of sin. We can't find ourselves living there. And action point B is, how do we overcome this fear? You overcome fear, the fear of subjection, with the knowledge of a sovereign, loving God. You know, fear is a great hindrance in the life of any wife to submitting to her husband. But what allows a wife to overcome this fear is the knowledge that there is someone greater than her husband in charge. I'm going to give you a real life example. It's the example of my in-laws. And many, many years ago, 32 years ago or more, actually probably more than that now, my father-in-law became an employee of the RCMP, and he was a special constable. And he saw his way to becoming a constable, moving out of the rank of special constable into constable, come his way, and it was a trip to Churchill, Manitoba, living up with the polar bears and basically no one else for a 2-year period. And this would allow him to take and become a constable. And so he went home to his wife and he said, you know, I'm thinking this is what I'd like to do. I'd like to move up to Churchill and I can become a constable, and this will be a good career choice for me. And his wife, my mother-in-law, said to him at the time, she was probably 25 or something like that, over my dead body, we're not going to Churchill, Manitoba. And so he said, okay. And he went back to work and he put in his papers for a move to Churchill, Manitoba. And as wrong as that may have been, or as right as that may have been, I don't know, he decided he was going to Churchill, Manitoba, and his papers came in and his transfer was ready, and he went home to his wife, my mother-in-law, and he said, guess what? Here's my papers. We're going to Churchill, Manitoba. And she, at that point, refused, and she said, no way. I am not moving to Churchill, Manitoba. You can go to Churchill, Manitoba yourself. I'm staying here. And she had a conversation with her mother. And her mother said, you said for better or for worse. Now you get on that plane and go to Churchill, Manitoba. And so she did. And I don't know whether she went with a cheerful heart. I suspect not. But she went to Churchill, Manitoba with her husband and the family. I think Barb was about three or four at the time. And they went to Churchill, Manitoba. And it was in Churchill, Manitoba that her unbelieving husband became a Christian. And to me, that is a huge example that God is in control. And here was a woman who did not want to submit, and perhaps even submitted with a poor attitude, but she went anyways. And it changed the course of life for her entire family. My wife grew up in a Christian home because of that. Because who knows what would have happened if she decided to stay home and he decided to go. And I don't even know that my mother-in-law was particularly trusting herself to the hands of a sovereign God at that time. I would probably think that she would say no. But in retrospect, the hands of a sovereign God were watching over them and orchestrating the circumstances. And she gave up 2 years of her life to have 40 years of marriage to a Christian husband. I think that's a miracle. And you can look at the life of Sarah, and you can find similar examples in Sarah's life. I would urge you, please, go home, wives, if you're having difficulty with this idea of submitting to your husband. Go home and study the life of Sarah and understand where her hope was. See where she derived her hope from. See what she submitted to in order to obey God and the great, great rewards that she received. She's still being talked about today. That leads me to action point C, which is retrain your brain. Retrain your brain. Romans 12, verse 2 says this: do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewal of your mind, that by testing you may discern what the will of God, you may discern what is the will of God, what is good and acceptable and perfect. You know, part of the problem is that you and I, and I'm talking about wives here in particular, is that you and I have patterns that we are set in. And the thing that we revert back to is the thing that is the only thing that we know. And if that is non-submission or unsubmissiveness towards your husband, or speaking to your husband in a certain way or a certain tone, if that is the pattern that has been set for you, when a circumstance arises and you are required to submit, the pattern that you will fall back to is the pattern that you know. And we need to retrain our brains with new patterns and new ways of speaking, and new things to do. You know, I'm continually amazed when I look at these elite athletes around the world and what they do in order to become an elite athlete. And one of the things that they do is they visualize themselves. Say a skier, for example, he visualizes himself going down every turn and making every turn and corner, and he sees every bend in his mind as he's going down the hill in his mind, and he's going through the course, and he memorizes that course, and he goes and rehearses it again and again and again and again. And this is similar to what we need to do if we are to retrain our brains. We need to find out, okay, in this situation, this is a situation that keeps coming up. It's with regards to child raising, for example, and we differ on this, and every time it comes up, it dissolves into an argument, and we fight, and we need to retrain our brain that when my husband says this, I'm going to respond this way, not according to the old pattern. And we need to rehearse a new pattern in our mind so that when a situation comes up, we have something to fall back on rather than an old pattern. We need to retrain and transform our minds by renewing them. And that is how we do it. That is how a world-class athlete becomes a world-class athlete. And that is how a wife becomes a world-class wife, is by retraining herself, retraining her thought patterns, and rehearsing those thought patterns so that when her husband walks in the door at the end of the day and is grumpy, she responds with this as opposed to the old pattern. I'm going to leave what this is up to you. You guys can think about yourself. But we need to retrain our minds, and we need to transform our minds, and they need to be renewed. And that leads me to my last point, which is pray for your husband. We think we can change them. I think I can change myself. I have a hard enough time with that. Wives think that they can change their husbands. This is the work of the Lord. There is nothing you can do other than respect and respectful and pure conduct. There is nothing you can do to change your husband. And prayer keeps us humble before the Lord, and it keeps us humble before our husbands, and it keeps our focus on God, who is going to do the work of changing your husband. The Bible says the prayer of the righteous man, and I think it applies to the woman as well, the prayer of the righteous woman availeth much. And I'm going to suggest to you a book that Barb picked up. I have not read it. I've skimmed it myself, but Barb was helped by it. I'm going to suggest this book to you. It's called The Power of a Praying Wife. And some of you may already have this in your house. It's an older book. It's been around for a few years. But it is a book that will give you something to pray every day if you want. And you can take one chapter and pray through the pertinent points of that chapter each day. And that way you are soaking your husband with your prayers, and probably the most reasonable way to expect your husband to change and to become more and more like Christ, or to become a Christian if he is not. So I refer you to that book, and to read it, and to pray through it, and to continue praying through it for the rest of your marriage, if you will. Next week, we will get on to the topic of husbands and their responsibilities towards their wives. I'm going to leave it at that for today. So husbands, gird up your loins and come back for battle next week. It might be messy. And we will discuss husbands at that time. But for now, let's turn to the Lord in prayer and ask him that he will help us in this huge task of wives being submissive to their husbands. And next week, as we learn about husbands and them living with their wives in an understanding way.